independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Okay, we'll get to back to Deshaun Watson a little bit later in the program. Mike Florio, who's been all over the Deshaun Watson case since the very beginning to now here at the very bitter end. He's going to join us at 2:15, so good timing with Mike Florio. We'll have him on at 2:15 later today, so you want to stick around for that. Also, Bad Take Boulevard. Just ahead of that, the worst takes you've heard all week. And if you've heard some bad takes, let us know. Maybe you'll make it into Bad Take Boulevard. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. But the Houston Astros playing some baseball. They're going to be playing some baseball today. A little day game in Chicago.
305
first pitch if you take the L train down to it used to be called Comiskey. I don't even know what it's called nowadays. Anyways, Astros, you know, they won a game yesterday. All good there. But looking at the Astros from a big picture perspective, because the Astros have been a very good baseball team for the last several years. They're a very good baseball team yet again. Best team in the entire American League. 76-43 entering play today. 305 first pitch. Wink, wink. The strength of this year's team, fair to say, starting pitching.
Yeah.
Best ERA absolutely. In all of baseball. Even if you want to go entire pitching. They have a 3.03 ERA. It is the best ERA in all of baseball. So the Houston Astros are at the very top of 2022 when it comes to the pitching. Their strength this season is the pitching. If you look at the start of the golden era for the Astros, which you can make the case maybe it was 15. I think people more look at the 2017 season as the
17
start.
17 won you the World Series. A lot of people think the 19 roster, though they didn't win it all,
sure, but
might have been the best roster in the history of the team.
Yeah. True, but I think the start of this era of Astro baseball, even though they made the playoffs in 15, missed it in 16, it really started in 17 to where you took off. All systems go, for a lack of a better
illustrated.
Way. Exactly. That they predicted you to win the World Series, and the prediction came true, which was the opposite of the SI jinx. Go figure. But if you go back and you look at the strengths of these last 5 years of Houston Astros baseball, or the last 6 years, I should say, 2017... I think you had a historically great offense. Like, the pitching staff was pretty good. You had Dallas Keuchel, Lance McCullers for most of the season. Then you made a trade for what was a struggling Justin Verlander, and then he turned into Cy Young after you traded for him. But if you were to look at the 2017 Houston Astros, that year was historic offensively. You had Jose Altuve, who was the MVP that season. You had Alex Bregman, who was right at the start of what was going to be his blow-up in 2018-19 when he was fantastic. You had George Springer. You still had a, you know, capable Yuli Gurriel. Carlos Correa was pretty good that year. That was a historic offense when you look at it. And there was some, you know, a little bit of shade that year. But the 17th team, with their strength was built behind their offense.
It was. And look, I mean, when you start thinking about the early years, that Springer factor meant so much, both offensively, defensively, and intangible-wise, because he was such a spark plug and an igniter of so many things with this team. And that was ultimate cockiness peak of Alex Bregman. That was a confidence level that, you know, that we had never seen before with the baseball team here. And that was basically the kind of they can't beat us mentality every single night, and we're going to let you know that. Whereas this team this year has been more about handle your business, go about your job, and if you do it the right way, people are going to figure it out. But they're not braggadocious. They're not boisterous. Yeah, Bregman's starting to get back to where he was, but it's not even close to where it was back in those days. But, you know, I think the same way that we're talking about the fact that they're doing things quietly and handling their business – quietly, when you look at this rotation.
Sure, sure. But the 17 team was the strength, was their offense. If you go to 2018, I think it's when it flips over to the pitching side of things. You still had Justin Verlander. And that year, you actually had the top ERA in all of baseball. You were number one in the American League in ERA. 2019, whenever you had Gerrit Cole in the 18 team, too.
I was going to say, because you had Cole in 18, but it really flourished in 19.
Well,
right?
It was actually better in 18. The numbers were better in 18 than they were in 19. They had a 3.11 ERA in 18. They had a 3.66 ERA in 19. They had the top ERA in the AL in 18. They had the second best ERA in 19.
But the Cy Young 1-2 finish was 19,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, look, when we start talking about the heyday of Astros baseball and this run over it is, I think sometimes we forget how strong the elements were, but how overall strong these teams were when you think about it, because when I look at it, look, as strong as the starting pitching has been this year, it's about depth in starting pitching, as we know, too, because you went seven deep with starters. You could continue. A guy went down, or you wanted to give guys more time. You could keep doing it and doing it and doing it. Where you look at what those teams back then were, they didn't have seven starters. But, boy, the top of their rotation and the starters that they had, they were pretty hard to beat, especially at the top of that rotation.
See, 18 kind of gets lost in the shuffle a little bit because you weren't 1-2 in Cy Young voting with Verlander and Cole, but you were second and fifth.
Keuchel was on that team?
You still had two. No, he left after. Yeah, he was. He left after 18.
Yeah.
So that year's rotation, your top five starters were Verlander, Cole, who weren't 1-2 like they were in 19, but they were second and fifth. Mm-hmm. Not bad consolation. You had Dallas Keuchel, who was still very good. You had Charlie Morton, who that year was unbelievable. Yep. He had a 3.13 ERA, and you had a young Lance McCullers. So like that rotation 1-5 was just as nasty as the rotation 1-5 in 2019. In 19, you had some injuries along the way too. Like Charlie Morton wasn't as good in 19
right.
as he was in 2018. In fact, Charlie Morton left in free agency in 18. He wasn't even on the 19 roster. So 18, you had Verlander, Cole. Lance McCullers got hurt that year. Then you had like Wade Miley and Brad Peacock. So you had better at the top of the rotation.
Yeah,
Verlander,
but you
Cole,
didn't have once, the, you didn't have the depth. Right.
The 18 top to bottom was a better pitching staff and better rotation than 19. But 19, you had better top end pitching slightly. 1-2 versus 2-5, not a huge difference.
And that's why when I look at this year's starting pitching, the one thing is Fromber's not getting enough credit for being a guy that could be comparable to Cy Young caliber statistics. When you think about 20 straight quality starts and think of the things he's doing, but he's being overshadowed not only by his own guy and Verlander, because we had that year when Verlander and Cole were doing it, but when you look at the rest of the league and some of the other guys and the Dylan Ceases and the kid in Tampa and even Garrett Cole, every time he pitches, there people are still looking at him more so than you're looking and talking about Fromber, but quietly, the top two are still there, but the key is the depth of the young pitching, and again, how far you can go with your starters to 6-7, even with Odorizzi out now that Lance McCullers is back. You have so many options that this team, from the standpoint of depth and talent, is better than I think than some of the teams you mentioned.
Right, and if you're going year by year with the strengths, I think 18, 19, and this year, your strengths are your pitching staff. 17, you had Altuve, a tremendous offense. 2020, you really didn't have a strength. You had a very mediocre regular season in a stupid year where you were playing 60 games and you were under 500. And then they woke up in the playoffs and went to the ALCS. So 2020, they really didn't have a strength. 2021, if you look at last year, was really their offense. Their pitching staff lost Justin Verlander. Lance McCullers was really good. But outside of McCullers and Fromber,
you didn't have an ace, and it was a handoff.
Yeah.
McCullers for most of it. I mean, Fromber for most of it handed up McCullers and Fromber and McCullers, but no one could tell you one was better than the other. One was the ace.
Yep.
They both were just doing their job.
But offensively was the strength of last year's team because you had Kyle Tucker who turned
Yuli into... Yuli
won a batting title. Brantley finished second, didn't he?
Yeah.
They were battling it down to the end. And on top of that, those weren't even your best two offensive players. You had Brantley and Yuli who finished 1-2, maybe it was 1-3, in the batting title, and Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez were better offensive players than either one of them, and probably Jose Altuve was a better offensive player.
Yeah, you discovered Yordan, who you weren't even having in your plans.
Well, you didn't discover him last year. He won the Rookie of the Year.
I'm saying you discovered a guy that wasn't even in your plans, even when you made the trade.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he became a premier player in the middle of that lineup.
So whenever you look at the strengths of every year since the Astros won the World Series in 17, offense in 17, pitching in 18 and 19, there was not a strength in 20. 21 last year was more the offense. This year, the pitching staff, the 3.03 ERA is actually better than it was in 18 and 19. Now, I don't like comparing ERAs from one year to the others because, look, baseballs sometimes can be a factor. We know that Major League Baseball likes to manipulate that, and scoring was down this year, especially early in the season. But the Astros do have the best ERA in the entire American League, like they had in 2018. They were second in 2019. And you got into some of the reasons of, like, kind of comparing this year's strength to the pitching. And I think it's hard to compare pitching strength versus offensive strength. So I think you have to look back to 2018, 2019, and compare the two about how does the strength of this team, the pitching, stack up to the strength of the previous teams. If you're looking at 18, I think it's similar in the fact that you go very, very deep, right? This year's pitching staff, the 2018 pitching staff, very deep throughout. You have Justin Verlander, who could win the Cy Young at the very top. Framber Valdez, who I think does kind of get lost in the shuffle in the Cy Young conversation, but was an all-star pitcher this year. I think he's going to finish around the top five in American League Cy Young, like Garrett Cole finished fifth in Cy Young voting in 2018. The return of Lance McCullers kind of throws a wrinkle into the evaluating the whole body of work, because Lance McCullers is your top three most talented starter on this team. Will he pitch to that? We'll have to see. But then Jose Urquidy's been solid as heck. Luis Garcia, solid as heck. Christian Javier, in kind of a smaller role, has been fantastic. He's got one of the best strikeout to K to nine inning ratios in all of baseball. His ERA would be up there in the top 10 if he had enough innings to qualify. So this year's team, I relate more to 18 than 19 because they have the depth like 18. They're just kind of missing that second horse at the top. When you have Verlander, right. Cole, this one has Verlander, Fromber. And look, I love Fromber. He's not Gerrit Cole.
No, he's not. But like, the depth gives you the, you know, an added bonus. But the other thing is the depth on the roster gives you an added bonus too, because now we're judging it based on regular seasons of teams of the past, right? Well, this team, we can't judge like that, because a guy that you had judged early on as an almost 300 hitter is done for the season in Brantley. But the guys you picked up, if you really wanted to be offensive-minded and focused in the way you put your lineup every day and not worried about defense, if you put Vasquez behind the plate and you put Mancini in the lineup every day and put your best offensive lineup out there, it has the potential to be better than almost any team that we're talking about with the Astros.
Sure.
But that's also considering that Yuli is having the worst year of his major league career.
Sure. Where does the strength of this year's team, the pitching staff, stack up to the strength of the previous year? 17, the offense. 18, 19, the pitching. Last year, the offense. Where do you think it stacks up, especially the 18-19 season? 713-780-ESPN. And does this rotation, is it above all the others that the Astros have seen in the last six seasons? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Luis Garcia pitches for the Astros today. His song is Bailas de Cumbia. So playing this ahead of his 305 start for whatever reason. Wink, wink. There's some people asking us for our opinion of the Houston Astros lineup today. Because, I mean, you usually have the lineup on multiple hours before a 305 first pitch, wink, wink. I'm fine with it.
I was fine with it today, too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to love Yuli Gurriel in the two-hole. I'm never going to love Yordan in the three-hole. I'm willing to concede those things if it means your best nine. And I think your best nine for the most part's there.
Today, for sure. And, you know, it's one of those days where the personal catcher is Vasquez for Garcia lately.
Yeah.
So he's in the lineup. So you
actually, it might be his first time catching Garcia.
He's caught Javier.
He's been catching Javier
and Urquidy. That's right. Yeah.
It might be the first time.
Well, actually, maybe this is our percentages starting to play in a little bit. Although
Chaz McCormick starting in center field against Arraigny. Back-to-back days.
Look. A revelation that we've been speaking about. Gosh.
It's kind of weird, though. It's kind of fishy,
discussions
honestly
that happen and then things that go with it. And it's crazy how sports radio works when you get it all to come together in a plan. It's awesome.
I smell something fishy with it. I really do.
What's fishy about it?
The fact that Chaz McCormick
he's
going to
do it and say he can't do it?
No, the fact that he had one start in center field since Jake Meyer's return, and then now he has like three in the last less than a week.
You think Click's getting involved?
The day after James Click said that Chaz McCormick's a center fielder, which was the day after Dusty Baker said he wasn't.
In my opinion, it's about damn time. I don't know if you just continued to just let Dusty be Dusty, and at a certain point you're like, okay, I can't take it anymore. Because, you know, we were kidding, and other people that we know in the media were even saying, do you really think that Click doesn't notice what Dusty is doing and not doing and all these things?
Yeah.
And the answer is no, because he's a very smart guy. And maybe at a certain point when we started asking, I've heard some callers call in recently going, who's really calling the shots? And is Click really just letting Dusty do whatever he wants? Maybe you're right. Maybe he just finally said, all right, that's enough. We're getting ready for the playoffs. We can't be doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very possible. Anyways, first pitch 305. We were having the conversation. Where does this year's rotation, because it's top in the American League, and the ERA is actually better than 18 or 19, the best ERA they've had in the last six seasons. Where does this year's rotation stack up with the best rotations the Astros have had in this golden era of baseball? We brought up our points in the previous segment. I think top to bottom, 1 through 5, it compares more to 18 than 19. I think top to bottom, it's better than 19, similar to 18. The only difference is that the top two, Verlander and Cole, I give the edge over the top two of this rotation, being Verlander and Fromber. I think Cole 18 better than Fromber in 2022, but I don't think it's a huge gap. I don't think it's I don't think it's like this massive divide, because Gerrit Cole's best season wasn't until 2019. Gerrit Cole wasn't his best yet in 18. Very good, fifth in Cy Young voting, but he became the Gerrit Cole that got this mega contract based more on 19 than 18.
Yeah, look, I think that when you're talking about a Verlander season that is comparable with his MVP Cy Young season, his first Cy Young season, and you look at all of his numbers and how great that they have been this season, I don't know how, you know, you can look at the top of the rotation and not think you're getting the best. You might be getting the best of Justin Verlander, maybe of his whole career.
Yeah, I think that's a wash, right? Verlander, yeah. Verlander at the top.
Yeah, and like I said, quietly, Fromber's doing more than people notice, especially nationally. But I think that if you had push come to shove and you had to pick one or the other, I still think you'd take Cole before you'd take Fromber.
Yeah, and I think 1 through 5, too, the year that you had, I mean, you still had Morton in there in 18, which, I mean, was really good. You still had McCullers in, a different pitcher McCullers in 18 than you do now, but you still, it's kind of a like for a like, right? 18 has the slight edge for me. 1509, 19 had the best of the best, but no, A.J. Hinch blew that World Series. He won one, though. Yeah, sure. A lot of people look at A.J. Hinch's tenure as the Houston Astros manager. And look, that was his last act as the manager. He was let go after that, as we all know. People look more at blowing Game 7 in 19 than they look at winning the World Series in 2017. And a lot of, like, dusty defense is always, well, A.J. Hinch blew the World Series. Yeah. A.J. Hinch has also won a World Series, mm-hmm. whereas Dusty hasn't. But people always go to the A.J. Hinch card a lot of times in the defense of Dusty.
You also, if you had it, if A.J. would have it to do all over again, if there were ways of seeing having signs leading up to it to where you had time to think differently and make decisions differently before it happened, mm-hmm. I'm sure he would encourage that. He would welcome that. The same way we're doing what we're doing, so that maybe, that, you know, whether it helps or not, that there's more notice brought to the fact that before this actually becomes A.J. Hinch in the World Series Part 2, that you can do things about it. You can do all the things that we've been highlighting and pointing out, the fact that we're not there yet. We're not to a point of no return where Dusty can't change his ways, where things can't be done differently, like playing Chaz McCormick in center field more often, like trying Trey Mancini in left field, like changing your batting order and not batting Mauricio Dubon at number one and Yuli, who's struggling, at number two in the lineup. And you can make those changes before it actually means more, it's more impactful, and it might cost you.
Yep. 8029, if Verlander walks, does Fromber become the ace of the Houston Astros? I would say by default he does. It'd be him and Lance McCullers.
Short term, he does. I was going to say, Lance, if Lance is healthy, has to be in that conversation.
Even if Lance is healthy, though, is he a better pitcher right now than Fromber Valdez?
But right now is such a... It's such,
I mean,
a
look
tricky
at last year, though. They would have finished top two, I believe, in ERA in the American League. I'm not sure that Fromber Valdez in 2021 wasn't a better pitcher than Lance McCullers in 2021.
And that's fine, but you're saying right now. But I'm saying if he's totally healthy.
I said 21. Okay. Lance was healthy last year.
But since then, he hasn't been. So what I'm saying is right now is he's trying to come back from injury. If he clears all the hurdles, he shows he's back to being himself. I think to start the season, you're talking about a guy that's seasoned more than Fromber and has more pelts on the wall, to where you would say, yeah, if Lance is back to his old self health-wise with his stuff too, which is nasty, mm-hmm. it's a phenomenal problem to have if you're trying to figure out who your ace is.
But if you're arguing the two, and Lance McCullers, would you take 2021 Lance McCullers? Would working his way back to health mean 2021 Lance McCullers? I would argue that it would. Fromber's ERA was slightly better than McCullers last year. Yeah. So I think Fromber would be the ace. Now, the luxury is, like, who cares, right? Like, okay, one guy's your ace, one guy's not. Who cares? They're both pitching every fifth, every sixth day, and it's a great luxury to have at the top, a two-headed ace. The Astros might have a three-headed ace if Lance McCullers gets right the rest of the way. Brent Strom. A.J. Hinch didn't put Cole in the game, which is why Cole was angry at the press conference. That's kind of hearsay, right? That might not even be hearsay. That might just be a theory that's out there that doesn't exist. Is the Astros' strength currently better than the Astros' strength of each of these previous years in the golden era of Astro baseball? 713-780-3776.
Isn't it also fair to analyze the weaknesses?
But it's not the question.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, as like a follow-up question, when you look at it, you could still point to some weaknesses with some of those teams.
Yeah, you could. There's some bullpens that weren't very good.
Exactly. But if you look at this team, could you say this is the most complete? I think it might not be like the most dominant like you had in 19, but as in terms of top to bottom, bullpen, starting pitching, offense, defense, is this the most complete team of this run?
I think that the 2019 team was the best playoff team. Like, the fact that they weren't as deep in the rotation as the 2018 rotation didn't really matter as much once you got to the playoffs and you trim a starter from the rotation. But in terms of, like, Kyle Tucker still wasn't getting regular at-bats over Josh Reddick in 2019. Like, he should have been. He should have been. Yordan was on that team, but he wasn't quite Yordan. I look at 19 as a more complete team than this one currently. But this year's team, I don't really see many holes in this year's team.
But, like,
team
when
either,
you take to some of the things you were saying on top of that, say, well, you've had 19 was what, McCann and Caveman?
No, it was actually Maldi and Chirinos.
Robinson Chirinos?
Yep.
All right. So
McCann retired, I think, after 17?
I think right after they won it. Right after they won it. So you can say that, well, you've got the two best defensive catchers, and the way Maldi's hitting now, but the way Vasquez hit all year, it's probably an upgrade at catcher, mm-hmm. which would normally be a weakness of any Astros offense.
Sure.
So there's an upgrade there. You know, offensively, it's a push between Correa and Peña, right? Except for Peña's scuffling.
I would give Correa the edge offensively.
And defensively? Because of
Correa
his arm.
At his time, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Correa this year has dropped significantly defensively.
Yeah, the Reddick factor, basically, and he was a good defensive outfielder, but Tucker's better all the way around.
We criticized a lot for A.J. Hinch in 19 for the decision. Whenever he pulled Greinke, went to Harris, didn't go to Cole, which if there's three ways to handle that decision, Greinke, Harris, or Cole, Harris would have been the last one that I picked. I would have kept Greinke in the game and given Cole a fresh inning. I wanted Cole to have a fresh inning, not come in
and what was it,
with an inherited runner.
It was tied when he could have brought Cole in and decided not to, or were they leading?
I think it was a one-run lead, give up a two-run homer.
Because I thought it was tied because his rationale for not bringing him in was because I only wanted to bring him in with the lead.
I thought he wanted to make sure that he had a clean inning, but he did say something about
the lead. Yeah, there was something about both of those
to preserve
things.
A lead. The one thing that I think gets kind of overlooked, though, for Hinch's, like if we criticize Hinch back in the day, 2019, was actually more that he was like his refusal to go with Kyle Tucker over Reddick. Like, Reddick was his Yuli. Like, he was just refusing to play Kyle Tucker every day. He would alternate at bats, alternate starts with Reddick over Tucker when Tucker was a better player. So that was another, like, overlooked thing that I think Hinch deserves some criticism for that really never got. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Davis Mills said that they're ready to shock the world. But what would be shocking for you that the Houston Texans would do in 2022? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Davis Mills told Peter King, look out, world, we're about to shock you. He said, we're going to shock the world this season. We're looking to shock the world. What would shocking be like to you? The Houston Texans do blank to where...
Whoa.
See what
Whoa.
I did there? The Houston Texans do fill in the blank. That would shock you. What is that? 713-780-ESPN. What would the Texans do that would be shocking to you? 713-780-3776.
As a team, the Texans start flirting with 8-9 wins. I think that would be shocking to me just because of the fact that with the advances they made in the roster and the progress that they've shown, I don't think they've shown enough to tell me that this team is going to turn it around that completely to be a playoff team. And from an individual standpoint, it would shock me if Davis Mills does everything he needs to do and checks every box and says and convinces this organization they don't have to consider another quarterback.
Yeah.
I just, because, you know, you and I have had this discussion before. I don't, it's not a, it, and again, let me be very clear. This is not in any way, shape, or form a slap at Davis Mills. I just don't think as much as the table is set for him, it's kind of a loaded deck in the fact that no matter what he does, I don't think that the situation presented to him is going to be where he can be good enough with the roster that they have to prove that it's his job and they don't need to draft another quarterback. And it's going to be too enticing to have two first-round picks and not consider a quarterback at one of them.
Right. Unless, I mean, if Mills plays well, you're saying. I'm actually a little bit, I guess, more optimistic about their win-loss record than I think you are. I look at the schedule and think that the Houston Texans could potentially get up to, you know, playing for 8 wins. Like, their schedule's not great. They have one of the worst schedules in the entire NFL, and they're playing in a division where you have 6 opportunities to where you're not in a, you know, murderer's row division. I think Jacksonville's going to be better than they were last year. I still think the Colts will be fine, Titans will be fine, but you're not in a division that's full of juggernauts, right? So, like, there's 6 winnable games just by default. You're playing a strength of schedule, 3rd in the division, not 4th, so it's not as easy, but still easy. You look up and down the schedule, the Texans can win some close games. So I put 8 wins in the realm of possibility. I want to take that word shocking seriously. I want to give it the due that word deserves. What would shock you as a Texans fan if the Houston Texans go out and do it in 2022? 713-780-ESPN. For me, it's a winning record. A winning record would shock me. 8-9, I can see the path somewhat. I think it's at the very high end of the range. It is the most optimal scenario and the most hopeful scenario for the Texans, but still within the realm of possibility. Winning record in 2022 would just completely shock me to no extent.
I think it's safer for me to say then, in terms of the shock factor, competing for a playoff spot. If they are, whether it's the last possible wild card or not,
yeah.
If they are in contention late in the season, competing for one of the last
spots. I think that's easier than 9-8. I think it's easier to be in contention for the playoffs than going 9-8. The Eagles did go to the playoffs at 9-8.
But then to shock me, you got to get in.
So shocking would be to make a playoff.
Make the playoffs this next season would be shocking.
See, that's what's interesting in the phrasing there. Because 9-8 more than likely is not going to get you in the playoffs. I know the Eagles did get there last year. But 9-8, you're not guaranteed a seat at the table in the postseason. Being in the playoff hunt last year, if you were in the NFC, like, you were 5-7 and you were in the playoff hunt last year in the NFC. So, like, that can be within the realm of possibility. You get to a winning record for the Houston Texans this year, I would be completely shocked, and I have to be eating a lot of crow. Like, I'll be honest with you. I have an over ticket for the Houston Texans this year. I think that the Texans are going to win more than 4.5 games.
See, and Granato does too. And I think that it is not out of the realm of winnable possibilities to think that you guys are spot on with that. But there's a huge difference between winning more than 4.5 and being a team that's flirting with a playoff.
Sure.
Less than a year after having the worst roster in the league.
That would be shocking, sure. But I think it would be less shocking than 9 wins. Because, like, I mean, 5-7 through 13 weeks, you're in the hunt.
Yeah, I think when you start thinking Houston Texans playoffs next season, that's shocking to me.
Absolutely.
It's the headline.
Yeah.
More than the actual reality of what that looks like. I thought when I put this on the rundown that 9 wins was my answer.
Yeah.
It's funny because I kind of disagree with you. I look at the schedule and go, man, I can get to 4 or 5 pretty easily, but each one after that is so tough.
Yeah, when I looked at it, I can see there's a couple of fudge games where you could say, oh, they have a chance to win that game, but I couldn't get to the 7, 8, 9 mark for wins for this team, just knowing the roster and knowing what they're, you know, where they're coming from. No matter how well they drafted, the fact they didn't spend in free agency, they couldn't possibly upgrade all the different positions. I don't see it.
Colts at home. Colts never win week one regular season. You should be in contention for every home game that you play. So there's one for the Houston Texans. You're going to Denver. Denver's overrated. Russell Wilson's just not very good. There's the 2 wins. You're going to Chicago. Chicago stinks. There's 3 wins. Chargers at home. You beat the Chargers at home last year. You beat the Chargers at home last year when you were worse. That's 4. You're going to Jacksonville. Jags still stink. There's 5. You're going to Vegas. Vegas is overrated. There's 6. You have Tennessee at home.
In Vegas. And you just flip it out like that. Nah.
That's not a home field. There's going to be more Texans fans there than Raiders. I'm just kidding. To me, you look at this schedule, though. Like, I don't understand where the difficulty's coming at, Brendan. Like, you have the Titans at home. You have the Eagles at home. Like, if you're going to be an 8-win team, you're going to have to win one of those. Like, that's not, you know, some juggernaut. That's not the Chiefs. Like, you play the Giants on the road. That's a winnable game. Giants are lousy. Commanders at home. The Commanders are lousy. What's Miami going to be? Who knows? What's Cleveland going to be without Deshaun? And then Deshaun coming back. Dallas will be tough. Kansas City home will be tough, but at least it's at home. And then you finish with Tennessee, Jacksonville, Indy. 3 division opponents. I don't see that schedule being difficult. Now, do I think the Texans ultimately will win 8 games? No. But that's not a tough schedule.
I think they have a very easy schedule to get to 4 or 5 wins.
Because of their roster.
I think
that's because more of their roster than their schedule.
Yeah, but you kind of flew by some games. Like, I know Tennessee's a divisional game, but Tennessee's, you know, a team that, as much as Ryan Tannehill was bad in the playoffs, Tennessee is a complete football team with, you know, and still have Derrick Henry and still have the capabilities of doing things defensively.
Derrick Henry coming off injury.
Right, but defensively alone.
Because, Jeremy, I think this separates you from me and Joel. Joel, would it shock you if the Texans went 4-2 in the division? Because it might shock me.
Yeah, I think it would.
4-2, like, I guess it's within the realm of believability, but it is stretching.
You're assuming you're going to sweep Jacksonville and get two more somewhere.
Somehow you get the other two. Like, I'm struggling to see that.
See, I actually think the division's better than what most people think.
Like, I have a really hard time seeing them winning more than three in the division.
Okay. Yeah, but you can still win three in the division. You're playing 11 games outside of the division, and now you're right around 5-6 outside of the division. I mean, your out-of-division schedule is not very tough. So you're going 5-6 out of the division. You go 3-3 in the division. You're looking at an 8-9 season.
I have to embrace the suck first and foremost. But when I look at this, and I'm trying to go game by game, I get caught up in the hype sometimes of how excited I am about the young players they've added and the fact that we finally can see a light at the end of the tunnel where progress is being made. But I can't get so caught up in that I suddenly think they're going to leapfrog teams that are more complete roster-wise, that especially just from a defensive perspective. You're taking a guy with his first chance to be the day one starter at quarterback, no matter what you put around him to, with an offensive line that you've reconstructed that's supposed to be better, but we don't know. And you're saying, go beat Tennessee's defense. Go beat the Raiders' defense. Go beat some of these teams that are going to come in there, and no matter what else, they're going to throw everything in the kitchen sink trying to see what this kid is made of. And I just don't think – I think that we're a year too fast to say that that's a season and a schedule where they could get to 8 or 9.
Sure. But that's like a realistic point of view. I also don't think the Texans are going to go 8-9. But if I'm looking at just an absolute – far-fetched, what is the best possible scenario? Like, I think that the Texans could go 500 in the division. They could win the three home games that they're playing in the divisions. No one's asking them to go out and go 6-0.
Nothing's out of the realm of the division because the division's not impressive by any means.
And again, I actually think the division's slightly better than what other people were thinking. I think Mike Vrabel's a heck of a football coach. If and this is kind of a big if, because Derrick Henry's getting older and older, and he's taken more and more abuse in his lifetime, and we know the shelf life of running backs in the NFL, so it wouldn't shock me if Derrick Henry is a shell of himself.
AJ Brown, you replace him with a rookie. Is that an upgrade? Probably not in the short term.
No, and the Colts, who knows? Like, I love Jonathan Taylor. Do I think Jonathan Taylor's going to be as good this year than last year? That's a high bar to try to hit again.
Teams are
going to
focus on him more than they did a year ago.
Ryan's old.
And then the biggest key is Ryan going to be an upgrade from Carson Wentz? And I think that's the only way you can expect that. You can look at that and say the Colts could be better. I think the Colts could be better if Ryan indeed is a I don't want to say significant, but I mean a decent amount better than Carson Wentz. And at his age, you don't know.
See, Wentz didn't have an awful regular season.
Regular season was better than people thought.
The way he finished the season, which was a disaster, which was a debacle, which was a dumpster fire,
Jacksonville
agree
was
on
his
all
AJ
of those
Hinch
things.
Game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
I mean, he was okay as a quarterback for a majority of the season. The game he had against the Raiders, lousy. The game he had against the Jags, even more lousy. And the way that he finished obviously left a sour taste in all of Indy's mouths. But Carson Wentz was an okay quarterback last year.
Yeah, they forgot about all the good the minute that the Raiders game was one thing, but at least you could accept that they were a playoff team. But the way they absolutely laid down against the Jags is the only thing people are going to remember about the Carson Wentz time in Indianapolis.
It would not shock me if Matt Ryan, statistically, does not put up the numbers that Carson Wentz did a year ago.
I'm not sold about his receivers. I'm not sold about where he is in his career.
See, I like the receivers a little more this year than I did last year, actually. Pittman a year older. Alec Pierce is a legit NFL rookie.
But still not saying much compared to...
There's a lot of unknown. It's not a
what Matt Ryan used to throw into, too, right?
Yeah, I mean,
for the most of his
last
career,
year
when
was
he had,
the exception.
He had White and Julio Jones.
Last year was the exception.
Last year, you know, you got a top three, four pick at tight end and that you're moving around the field. But
the Ridley thing last year really crushed him.
Right. So I don't know that I expect a whole lot out of Indy because I'm not expecting a whole lot out of Matt Ryan. And I think that the Texans could be in those games. But I just think that's where depth, and especially in the trenches in Indy, when you're talking about the offensive and defensive lines, they've invested a ton in both. And whether you want to get into Cody Stutes and Jake discussion about Quentin Nelson or not, he's a beast.
He's
their
a
offensive
beast.
Line is tough. The defensive line, which they made some trades and did some things to make sure their front seven is very, very tough. I think that's where games are won and lost, and I think that's why I think the Texans aren't there yet in terms of being able to jump the Colts.
No, I mean, it's not realistic. It's what is the best possible scenario for the Houston Texans. It's what would shock you as a Texans fan? 713-780-ESPN, we ask you that question. What would shock you as a Houston Texans fan? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What would shock you as a fan of the Texans if it happened in 2022? I'm saying a winning record. If the Texans get to 9 wins, whew, I would be completely shocked for the Houston Texans. Davis Mills telling Peter King, we're ready to shock the world. So you define that for us. What is shocking the world, in your opinion, for the Texans this year? You said as a playoff team. That would be, I mean, I think it's pretty much the same. I mean, it's ish. It depends on the rest of the conference. I think those are right
to some degree, but I think that it's one thing to say, look, they could hover around 500. It's another thing to say, deep into the season, that you're talking about a team flirting with getting into the actual postseason.
Yeah. What was yours, Brendan? What would surprise, what would shock you from a Houston Texans perspective if they did it in 2022?
I came into the show today with the answer being 9 wins as well.
Uh-huh.
I think I'm going to remove one.
You're going to 8. You think 8?
I think 8.
Like, it sounds like a bidding game. Name that tune.
I thought you were going
to
actually.
It's still in that ballpark. Like, I think 5 to 6 is very believable.
Mm-hmm.
And then each one you add after that starts to get a lot tougher.
See, I came into the discussion with the same thing you did. 9 wins would be shocking to me. But then the more we talked it over, instead of stepping it back one, I'm stepping it up to say it's not about the 9 wins. It's about if this team legitimately has a chance to make the playoffs.
I think it's a little bit more sensational, right? And I'm not saying that you're sensationalizing it, but
it's like, a headline.
Yeah, it's a headline. 9, it's you doing the Yahoo Sports.
It's literally shocking
headline.
Me. It's not but being like, impressed. It's like going, right. Holy, this team could make the playoffs?
See, our answer could be the same. 9 wins could be playoff team, mm-hmm. but when you put it with that phrasing, sensationalizing it a little, not saying that you're doing that intentionally, it becomes more headline grabbing. What is shocking to you, Houston Texans as a playoff team? 9964 says starting the season 6-0 or 5-1 would be shocking. I would agree with you, 9964. Mm-hmm. That would be very shocking.
The idea of a really hot start is interesting. Like, they just get off to a start, and you're like, wait, hold on, what is this team?
Like last year when they started 1-0
well, you
right
and I,
out of the gates?
Well, yeah, like, even 3 or 4-0, I think you go, wait, hold on, what is this?
We were like the
That's
only
a
two,
good point.
We were the only two to call that game, too, to be, like, right off the jump, yeah. You can catch a team, like, not ready for primetime yet and
yeah.
get a win. But if you catch a team, if you catch the first 5 or 6 opponents who, with each win, the game planning changes.
That's right.
Yeah, people, yeah, that would be something.
I bet Texans money line that game. Because rookie head coach, mm-hmm. rookie quarterback, I bet Texans money line on that game.
You know how down I was on Urban Meyer.
Yeah, I mean, that was easy money. That was easy. That was routine. You can always take gambling advice from the Killer Bees because we're always on it. What would shocking be to you? See, I like this answer here because this is kind of changes the way that I look at this question. What would be shocking to you? 1706 says it would shock me if the Texans could put together a top 10 defense. Because I only looked at this question from like a win-loss perspective, where maybe we could look at it from a position group point of view or a player point of
view.
Well,
that's why I looked at it from a Davis Mills perspective
sure, you did.
To say, yeah, if you're going to shock me, then he's got to do that.
Now, top 10 defense would be shocking. Like, I think the defense has the foundational pieces to be good someday. I just don't put the ETA on being good someday in 2022. I think the earliest the defense can be top half of the NFL is in 2023, but the pieces are in place.
If your defense is good, Christian Kirksey is not a star.
Not a star, but I think he could be a role.
I think
he could be a player.
I think Christian Harris is involved in that. I think because you've
That's what it would step up again,
Yeah,
right?
You've got Petrie. You've got a secondary that's been better than it's been in, like, God knows how long. And then, like we said, Grenard's going to keep developing in your front 7. Jerry Hughes suddenly finds the fountain of youth. And
no,
you,
he's not. He's not. That's not going to happen.
Okay, well, then it's not. Then we can't shock anybody.
But, I mean, Jerry Hughes isn't, like, dire for the Houston Texans
to finish
top 15.
He can draw some attention so that you don't see doubles every single time on Grenard.
See, I think where Jerry Hughes is going to help this team, opposite of John Grenard, is the rotation that he's in and that opposite defensive
stays
end
fresh
position.
And like put pressure.
I mean, you don't need 10 sacks from Jerry Hughes. You need 3 from Hughes, 3 from Green, 3 from Obu. And there you go. That's what you have opposite of John Grenard.
that's fine. I just, like I said, overall, to get to where the texter is talking about and get that to a top 10 defense, I think a lot of things have to fall into place.
But he said that was what would shock him. Like, yeah. I would say top 15 would actually shock me. Like, if I'm trying to define that for what I am. Now, I do think that the Houston Texans could potentially be a top 15 defense next year.
Right.
In 2023, when Derek Stingley has a year in the NFL. He goes into his second season feeling a little bit better. Jalen Petrie, same thing. Because, look, rookies, and I think the Texans have talented rookies defensively. Stingley, Petrie. I think Harris is going to be a really good player. I think that was a really good mid-round draft pick. They are rookies, though.
So you're going to get burned. You're going to take your lumps.
They're going to have flashes where you're like, okay, that guy's going to be really good. But like, how to make it in the NFL to be a good player is that you eliminate the mistakes. You eliminate the bad. Every single person in the NFL, every person, roster spot number one to roster spot number 53, is going to have plays on a football field where they look really good. But what separates the great players from the mediocre to bad players is that their bad does not exist.
You eliminate the bad plays, and those bad plays happen when they're not impactful.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the 80-yard bomb that you completely got turned around on that changed the entire landscape of the game. It's you got burned, but the quarterback wasn't looking that direction and ended up dumping it off to the halfback coming out of the backfield on a wheel route. And so you escaped and dodged a bullet. So, yeah, absolutely. It's the fact that all these young players, especially if you're drafted highly, they're going to make good plays. But if you can avoid the damage on the plays that you get burned on and you screw up on, that's where you're doing something.
That's honestly my assessment a little bit on Deshaun Watson. Like Deshaun Watson, you look at a 15-minute, 10-minute highlight reel, oh, that guy's the best player in the league. But then whenever you start looking at mistakes that Deshaun Watson makes and the sacks that Deshaun Watson takes, it puts you in a lot of terrible situations. And, like, staying ahead of the change is critical in the NFL. Like, 3-yard run, 2nd and 7. Okay, you're ahead of the change. You're in a good spot. You take a sack on 1st and 10. You're 2nd and 19. You drive over. It kills you. And Deshaun Watson makes a lot of those plays. Look, Tom Brady doesn't wow you. If you look at a 10-minute highlight reel, if you put a 10-minute highlight reel of Tom Brady next to a 10-minute highlight reel of Deshaun Watson, which highlight reel are you taking? You're taking Deshaun, without a doubt.
Yeah, you're just talking about the SportsCenter moments.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. When you're talking about the result at the end of the game, regardless of personal stats, you'll take Brady all day, every day, because there's a reason why he's the GOAT, because he does what's necessary from the quarterback position without having to have the flash and the dash and the sports center moments.
He's consistent, and his floor, is way up here. Deshaun Watson's floor is rock bottom. Now, Deshaun Watson's high might be higher than Brady's,
right.
But you have zero consistency from a position where you need consistency.
If you go Deshaun, speed, you can take all the intangibles or the individual attributes and say Deshaun, at the end of the day, you're still taking Brady because, like you said, when the game's on the line or when everything matters, he's smart and he makes the right plays and he knows what needs to be done regardless of how much credit he gets for it.
That's what pro sports is, man. Every professional player is going to look good and look great at some point. How the great stay great is they eliminate almost all of the bad. Their floor is higher than everybody else's. But what would shock you defensively? Looking at it from both sides of the ball, the texture saying top 10 would shock him defensively. I think if they finish in the top half of the league, that would actually shock me defensively.
I think top 15 would be shocking.
Yeah. It sounds like we're about the same spot. How about on the offensive side of the ball?
I think from an offensive perspective, if you see Davis Mills like really flourishing and you see the fact that they have a running game, and you see that Brandon Cooks can be the Brandon Cooks that everybody always every year thinks he could be, that he showed signs of in the past. And this team is, again, I would say the same thing. I would use the same benchmark. If this team's top 15 offensively, that would be shocking to me as well. Because there's too many good quarterbacks in this league.
I feel stronger about the defense than I do offensively.
Though. I agree.
So, like, I'm willing to go a little further defensively to where shocking me defensively would be top 15.
But
it's
stunning and shocking if they're top 15 offensively.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it would be more difficult for the offense to get there than the defense. But if I'm saying top 15 would shock me defensively, top 20 offensively actually shocks me. Like, I look at the offense, Davis Mills, like, even if Davis Mills is solid, you're asking Davis Mills to take care of the football. They've been mentioning that all the time. I don't see Marlon Mack having a top 20 running back season. I think Damian Pearson, it's kind of like we were just talking about with Stingley and Petrie. He's going to have flashes preseason week number one, where he looks very, very good. But he's going to have some mistakes. They're probably not going to trust him on all the assignments, whether it's routes, whether it's pass pro. So, like, he's not going to get 20, 25 touches a game. I like Brandon Cooks, but Brandon Cooks I consider a bottom-end wide receiver one in the NFL. He's not elite. He's good. He's solid. He's not elite. Who knows what Nico Collins is going to be? If they're in the top 20 offensively in the NFL, I'd be shocked.
And he's not going to be
probably
anybody
Conley, maybe more, but...
But he's not going to be anybody that knocks your socks off.
He's a guy.
You got, exactly. He's a guy. And then at tight end, you have absolutely nobody.
They're hoping. Some people think they have somebody.
No. They're hoping someone gets cut.
Farrell Brown, Brevin Jordan. Those are your two dudes.
Brevin Jordan. I don't want to hear anything else about who physically looks like a specimen.
They all
play
look
the
like
position.
Specimen.
Right.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. Farrell Brown looks great. Brevin Jordan looks great. They look like they belong in the NFL. Go show me a tight end that doesn't.
I don't care whether you've got, you know, abs of steel or not. Can you catch a ball on 3rd and 12 in traffic over the middle? Can you make the block that frees up a running back when you need a first down? Can you do the things that a tight end's supposed to do? I don't care if you're ripped or not and you came into camp in shape. Because, oh, by the way, that's what you're supposed to do, too.
Especially tight ends.
Like, right.
If anybody has NFL bodies, it's the tight ends, right? Okay, that sounds great. 3209.
You're on your own, Chief.
Don't cut that up, Brendan. Don't be paying attention to the last 15 seconds. 3209, it would shock me if they don't cut Ross Blacklock. Lamont on Twitter saying it will shock me if they play a video tribute for Deshaun Watson.
Ooh, good call. That's a good call. That's one where in the past we've kicked around who gets a tribute video. Yeah, I don't think there's no discussion there.
No discussion there. 713-780-ESPN. What would shock you about the Texans in 2022? All right, Bad Take Boulevard. Every Thursday at 2, we take a look at the bad takes over the last week. If you have some, let us know. Maybe you'll make it in to Bad Take Boulevard. 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.